I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. President Trump is still smarting over losing the election to Vice President Joe Biden and refuses to acknowledge the results. He said at the first debate that bad things happen in Philadelphia, and more recently disparaged Philadelphia City Commissioner Al Schmidt, who was a Republican, after Schmidt said on CNN this week that this was the most transparent and secure election in the history of Philadelphia, and complained about bad actors lying to people. Schmidt said on 60 Minutes that his office was getting death threats. Well, here to talk about voting in Philadelphia is Omar Sabir, who is also a Philadelphia City Commissioner. He's a Democrat. Omar Sabir, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. It is my honor to be here. Again, I've been interviewed by CNN, 60 Minutes as well, a lot of international publications, but again, I'm a WHYY member. Oh. This is a surreal moment for me. I'm freaking out.
I'm blushing on the radio, Omar Sabir, so thank you for saying that, but thanks for joining us. And let me just make sure our listeners can join us as well. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Omar Sabir, what do you say to the President of the United States? Frankly, I'm not going to repeat what he said about Al Schmidt. Just suffice it to say that he insulted him, he disparaged him. What do you say to the president about your fellow commissioner?
What I say to him is that, you know, just be careful of the words that you say, because they have meaning. And the death threats have been coming before Election Day. So, I mean, it's frustrating that we're trying to do our job. We're trying to ensure that Americans have access, and that's what Crispus Attucks, Octavius Cato, that's what they died for, so that Americans can have access to the democratic process. And again, we are an unprecedented level of transparency in regards with our elections. The elections were live streamed. I mean, the canvas process was live streamed. Everyone had access if you had the appropriate credentials. So it's very disheartening to hear the misinformation going on, you know, around the country. And again, this is a nation we need to heal, and I hope that we move forward.
Well, and I want to pick up on all of that. I just want to—I don't want to spend too much time on death threats, but nonetheless, I'm assuming you and the other commissioners have taken steps, or steps have been taken, to make sure that you are protected and others affiliated with your office.
Yes. The Philadelphia Police Department, the Sheriff's Office, and we also have private security as well. And, you know, we appreciate them, you know, for their safety, you know, for keeping us safe.
Let me quote my colleague, Dave Davies. As you know, and as our listeners know, he knows Philadelphia like nobody else. He tweeted this yesterday afternoon. He said, "The people tallying votes in this presidential election are civil servants who aren't likely to risk their jobs and pensions, not to mention felony arrests, by monkeying around with returns in a closely watched count." And that raises a whole host of questions about just the impact of the allegations against you, against the city, and against these city workers.
Yes. Again, you know, and when we receive, when we explore our processes after Election Day, you know, typically, whenever we see irregularities, we report them to law enforcement agencies. And, you know, there was a case from the 39th Ward where there were irregularities. The city commissioners had informed law enforcement agencies, and there were charges filed. I know there's a federal case going on right now. So, again, you know, we have done our due diligence. And, again, I believe that the election results will stand. And, again, you know, that misinformation disenfranchised voters. You know, confusion is what makes people don't have confidence in the process. And, you know, especially in black and brown communities, you know, we had talked to numerous constituents, and they are regurgitating a lot of the nonsense that's on social media. And we have to reassure our constituents that their vote is safe.
There are allegations about dead people voting. Has that been looked into?
Yes, it has. Commissioner Schmidt had we searched the internet, and we looked at all of the false allegations. We looked into them, and not one allegation was true. And also, we have received report about our legendary Smoking Joe Frazier. They said that he voted. We looked into it, and it's not false. You know, Joe Frazier, the Philadelphia legend, did not vote from the grave.
Have all the votes in Philadelphia been counted?
Yes, yes, pretty much. We're just tying everything up. We're still going through the provisionals, and we're still in the return board. So we'll be finishing up pretty soon. As of now, we sent up a pre-certification to the Department of State where over 751,000 Philadelphians cast their vote in Philadelphia.
How does that compare to past presidential elections in terms of turnout?
So we saw a record amount of voter registration. We was over 1.1 million, which was the most we've seen in 35 years, which was great. But again, you know, there is work that needs to be done. There was more people that voted in 2016.
Oh, more people voted.
The turnout was higher, so we need to do that.
Do you have theories why, or is that something we have to think about and talk about?
Well, again, there's over 200,000 people that live in Philadelphia that's living in poverty. There's another 200,000 people that lack basic literacy skills. So when we transitioned over to vote by mail, Act 77, I believe that contributed to not to as many people participating in the process, and also the rhetoric that was going on. It was intentionally to disenfranchise voters, and people, they were very leery, especially in the African American communities, about voting by mail. Mm-hmm. So that presented them a very difficult choice: do I risk my health and vote in person? Or do I try this new process of voting by mail? So, again, Act 77 was passed, which is a beautiful, reform.
Sure.
But the reform didn't have the appropriate resources that we needed to go out and educate the community. We had to get, a grant from a nonprofit to get the resources that we needed. And, again, which I still believe that we're still underfunded. If you compare our office to Denver, Colorado, whose budget is around $10 million, and they have 400,000 voters. Our annual budget is $10 million, and we have 1.1 million voters. So, again, we've been underfunded. Hopefully people can see the value of elections and invest more resources in our department.
I'm curious about the balance between what percentage of people then use mail-in and what percentage of people in Philadelphia voted in person.
Okay, it's been 50%, basically. So 50-50? In a primary... we saw that same number. If you were more affluent, if you came for more wealth, and as we look at the race, if you're a white, more affluential, then you typically voted by mail. If you're African American or Latino, you typically voted in person. That was above like educational levels as well. It was kind of like half and half. So again, we want to do better. And I guess the simple reality that we're faced with now moving forward is that we have to do an in-person election and we have to do a mail-in election. Again, it's very expensive. And again, the education, I can't stress how important it is for us to really use these platforms that we're talking right now and make an issue out of educating people on how to vote. We're asking people to vote a different way than they have voted for 40 consecutive elections or 50 consecutive elections. This is what our constituents have said. You're asking us to vote different. But we don't know how. So, again, we need resources to teach our citizens how to vote.
I'm looking at a tweet that President Trump sent out yesterday alleging that poll watchers were not allowed to watch the civil servants who were counting the ballots. Can you correct that for us?
That's not true. It's not true. That is totally, totally false. Again, we have a live stream, which is available from everyone in the world, can watch and observe the canvas process. If you have the appropriate credentials, you were allowed and you allow access, to watch and observe the process. Again, we've done an unprecedented amount of transparency. And again, it's very sad, but I guess it goes to the old saying, in regards with elections. You have a winner and then you have someone that's robbed. There's never a loser, and it's a shame. shame. I mean, this really is a shame. I mean, I've been on the losing side of a campaign before, and it's a hard feeling sometimes to accept results, right? And again, you know, if the president, you know, wants to exhaust as many resources as he wants, you know, he can go to the courts and, you know, we'll figure it all out. But again, you know, I just hope that, you know, after the courts settle everything, you know, we be on the side that we're on as far as us, you know, administering an ethical election, you know, that he will accept the results and we'll move on as a nation.
I'm looking at another tweet. Actually, this is from Billy Penn from yesterday. Mail-in ballots for more than 2,000 Philadelphians need ID verification to be counted. If your name is on this list, you have until today to fix it. Omar Sabir, anything you want to add to that?
Yes. Until 5 p.m., to send us the appropriate information. If someone wants to email me right now, my email address is omar.sabir@phila.gov. omar.sabir@phila.gov, and you can email me, and you know we can assist you in the process, or you can call my office at 215-686-3462, or you can call, you know, the County Board of Elections as well. Sure. But again, you know, we can, you know, look into it. We can make sure we have a task force set up so that we can address this.
Do you have any idea how the president's lawyer, Rudolph Giuliani, ended up at Four Seasons Total Landscaping when the results from Pennsylvania came in?
You said, do I know how he ended up being there?
Yes.
No, I don't. I really don't.
Are there any lessons then looking ahead for, obviously we got, you know, in 2 years some more elections, and then we've got another presidential election in 4 years, which seems like it's right around the corner, but kind of lessons learned from this year that we can think about, all of us can think about looking ahead?
Well, again, I mean, we have another election in 2021. You know, there's an election every 6 months, and we will elect judges, we will elect the controller. We will elect a district attorney. And again, we have to stress the importance of voting in every single election. You vote for resources and you vote for accountability. And that's the reason why people sacrifice and die. That's why Octavius Cotto, that's why Crispix Attucks, that's why these heroes sacrifice their life so that Americans can have access to democracy. And we have to drive that theory home. We have to beat the pavement to let people know how important it is to vote, because there are a lot of constituents in Philadelphia who don't believe just fundamentally about voting. Yeah. That's one lesson that I learned from talking to constituents with our strategic community outreach. And another component which I learned was the social media, the effects of social media. We have to have a major investment in social media. Because people listen to social media.
Sure.
They take it
next. Sure. You know what, Omar Sabir, we have to leave it there. You've given us a lot more to talk about for the rest of the hour. Thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times. Really appreciate it. Philadelphia City Commissioner Omar Sabir. And yes, more after this very short break. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. State officials from both parties and election experts have reported that the 2020 election went smoothly this year without any major problems or violence or irregularities in spite of the pandemic and with a dramatic increase in mail-in ballots. In fact, turnout broke records, giving Joe Biden enough votes to win the White House and Republicans to get more seats in the House of Representatives and have wins in states like Pennsylvania. On the other hand, President Trump's campaign has filed a series of lawsuits alleging, without evidence, widespread voter fraud. Most of these charges have fallen apart in court or under greater scrutiny. Well, here to join us for the rest of the hour, we have Craig Green joining us by Skype, professor of law at Temple University. Craig Green, you were in Japan for a while. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much. I love the show.
Thanks so much. Also with us is Danielle Lang, and she's co-director of Voting Rights and Redistricting at the Campaign Legal Center. And Danielle Lang, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to be on my hometown radio station.
Oh, I did not even know that. Well, that's terrific.
Yeah, I'm from Bucks County.
You're from Bucks County. Okay, there we go. All among friends here talking about such an important issue. Let me just make sure our listeners can join us. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I do want to start with some of the good news. And perhaps, Danielle, I can start with you. In my introduction and in preparation for the show, I was looking up some things. I think almost 140 million people voted in the middle of a pandemic. Can we just give a shout out to some of the good things that happened this election season?
Absolutely. I think the American people are the folks who deserve a shout out. We didn't necessarily make it easy for them always. States differed a great deal on whether or not they made vote by mail easy or hard. Pennsylvania, luckily, was a state that had just implemented universal vote by mail access. And so Pennsylvania was one of the states that made it easier. But we didn't always make it easy on Americans to vote this season during a pandemic, but voted they did in overwhelming numbers. The greatest turnout we've seen in a presidential election. I'm just really proud of the energy and democratic spirit of Americans of both parties showed up in record numbers.
Craig, going to give you a chance to weigh in on that, and then we'll talk about all these allegations of fraud. But how did you see turnout and things like that?
Sure. I think turnout is one story, and the other is the one you just finished in a way. I'm a former DOJ lawyer for the George W. Bush administration, and I have a soft spot for government bureaucrats. And I think that across the country, you had election officials and hardworking election counters and educational efforts that I think helped enable the American people to vote the way that they did. And so I think you have two heroic stories. One is the government bureaucrats who are also coping with coronavirus risks and putting themselves at risk in that kind of way. And I think you hear a lot about various mechanisms that are disfranchising people. And I think mail-in ballots are certainly no panacea, as you also heard. But I think there is a real celebration of American voting that happened this year. And I think there's a chance that one could lose sight of that in some of the fighting after the fact.
Well, and there's a lot of fighting. And I think one of the questions, in fact, Craig, let me toss this back at you. There are a lot of lawsuits being filed, a number of them in Pennsylvania, other states obviously as well. And I think the question is, how much credence do we give them? How much do we talk about tweets that are not true? When talking about fraud, it can be kind of fraught trying to sort of get to what the truth is when you have to go through so many things that are untrue.
Such a hard thing. And I think that a lot of mainstream media and public radio media and social media are all having that kind of problem. But one thing to know about the challenges is that there's nothing new about this. President Trump has been attacking elections as long as he's been in elections. And he claimed that in 2016, there were millions and millions of illegal voters that explained Clinton's high popularity. None of that was true. I think he's been claiming that there would be millions of ballots printed by foreign countries. That isn't true. That was in June, July, and August. He was making these kinds of claims. And so in a way, I think that then there is this fundamental choice that Americans have to make of what stuff they believe and what stuff they do not. But Donald Trump's record, he's been disconnected from electoral integrity for years and for months. Now, as to the lawsuits very particularly, almost all of them have already been thrown out. There are only a few left. And there's a temptation to think of their particulars. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But I think it has to also be seen in this broader context. There is no nicer way to say it. Donald Trump does not like the results of this election, and he's been preparing himself for months to say whatever he could say to undermine them. And you have hardworking electoral voters and electoral workers, and you have the American people on the other side. I mean, President-elect Joe Biden received almost 5 million more votes than Donald Trump. And as it happens under the Electoral College, he earned more states with more electoral votes. And the lawsuits will go forward, and they'll be decided as they are. But there's nothing at all credible or persuasive or suggestive that anything is going to change. And I think that really colors the way we think about the rest of the story.
Danielle Lange, I was reading that something like 70 to 80% of Republicans, and the president got, you know, what, 70 million votes, but 70 to 80% of them do not see Joe Biden as the legitimate winner. Obviously, everything has to be finalized and made official, but nonetheless, everything is pointing in that direction. But when you have a sizable percentage of one party that sees the elected president as illegitimate, where does that leave us as a democracy?
Well, it's obviously unfortunate, and it's been fostered by an irresponsible president that, as Professor Green said, is, you know, fostering anti-democratic beliefs and kind of making up truths that are more convenient for himself. That being said, I saw similar numbers on the other side, which is that when you look at Americans as a whole rather than one party, they overwhelmingly understand that Joe Biden won this election fair and square and will be our next president, regardless of whether or not they personally voted for them. So we can look at, you know, a small slice of perhaps registered Republicans and see an unfortunately sad story and one that does need to be corrected. But overwhelmingly, Americans understand that this was a fair election. In fact, they, you know, overwhelmingly participated in it. And so they saw it firsthand that this is how democracy works. And there is unfortunately a bit of a truism that if you continue to repeat the same thing over and over again, more people might believe you. And that is certainly Donald Trump's tactic. As was being said, you know, he's been saying this for years and years and years, that all that there's millions of fraudulent votes and they all are for Democrats, and you know, that all of the fraud goes in one direction, and so he always wins. You know, it's a very kind of tails I win, heads you lose perspective that the president has on elections. But that is not what Americans understand elections to be. So we do have to be careful, I think, not to just repeat lies. Sure. And repeat like some suggestion that just because one powerful person with a loud bully pulpit is willing to peddle lies about our democracy, that cannot distract us from what was really a momentous election of participation of Americans.
In fact, Craig, Republicans did very well this election season, maybe not for the top job, but when you look at the House of Representatives, you look in Pennsylvania, for instance, two statewide elections went to two Republicans.
Certainly right. And I think this is a reason that you'll see, I think, increasingly partisan Republicans giving up the ghost. I think Karl Rove wrote an editorial yesterday saying effectively none of these legal challenges are likely to make any difference in the outcome of the result. Former Republican, former Governor Scott Walker said you can ask for a recount in Wisconsin, but don't expect much to come from it, which I think then shows again this is all about thunder and smoke much more than anything else. But, you know, of course it's true. If mail-in ballots were somehow sort of suspect, then what about the Republican Senate elections? And this is a reason the Republican Party is in an awkward spot, where on the one hand, it's hard for them to really tear up their own president and say he's lying and he's not telling the truth. Although, of course, just to say it this way, you know, Fox News has said that about some of his claims that they're lies. But I think that's really important in this world of political division and so forth to understand that this election went through different mechanisms, but its credibility, its integrity, and its accuracy are all handled by the same people, including Republicans. Republican governor in Arizona and Georgia, Republican Secretary of State, whom Donald Trump endorsed the Secretary of State in Georgia. Mm. And of course, in Philadelphia, you have Democrats and Republicans all doing their hard work to make sure the election is fair and accurate. And I think that as that's, you know, everyone says sort of the lie goes around the world before the truth gets its shoes on. But I think that in this case, I'm a little more optimistic. I think that the more inconsistent with what Danielle was saying, I think the more people look at it and the more people think about it, the more people understand, like, it was a close election, not that close, but it was a close election in some states, and it produced a number of results all up and down the ballots, you know, for president and for representatives. And I think that it has to be accepted. Eventually, that's what I have to believe.
Well, let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Craig Green. He's a professor of law at Temple University. Also with us, Danielle Lang, co-director of voting rights and redistricting at the Campaign Legal Center. And we are talking about, last week's election, but the results are still being challenged largely by the president of the United States and by a number of high-level Republicans. And again, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Let me toss something else out. And there are a number of challenges in Pennsylvania, some other states. But one thing I saw this morning in a number of headlines, and I'll put this to you, Danielle, is that while the challenges are significant, they're largely about technical problems or procedural errors. Are people not putting their signature in the correct place? Things like that. That is not voter fraud.
That's absolutely right. And I think it was just the other day in court that a judge had to put directly to one of the lawyers, you're not actually alleging that any of these votes are fraudulent, are you? And the lawyer, when standing up in court rather than on Twitter, had to say, no, we are not. We have no evidence that these votes are fraudulent. Quite frankly, the procedural and kind of technical claims that are being brought forward are not much stronger, but they are relatively narrow in scope. Most of the claims that are being made, even if the president was to be successful in all of them, which he's been successful in none of them so far, would not change the result of the election. They're, about 100 votes here or 100 votes there. They're not about tens of thousands of votes. And that's because there is no kind of broad, widespread issue that his lawyers can find that could actually, survive even being sanctionable to bring to court. And, there was most recently a lawsuit filed in Pennsylvania that takes these kind of 10 ballots here, 100 ballots here, and then says, but you should just throw out the whole election. And that's, of course, not what courts do, because courts know that they are not the American people. They don't decide elections. The American people do.
Well, let me pick up on some of that, Craig, and I'll go back to you. This is a relatively new suit related to the Pennsylvania election coming from the GOP that it should be invalidated because in-person ballots were treated differently from mail-in ballots. Is that a legal argument to toss an entire state of ballots?
Well, at a certain level, it's a legal argument if lawyers make it, but it's a terrible argument. I think that's true. It's an unprecedented argument. It's an unsubstantiated argument. And it's one of the arguments that actually is really late. If this were a serious argument about mail-in ballots, they could have filed this kind of lawsuit in April or May or June or August, along with any of the tweet storms that accompanied those kinds of dates, instead of waiting till after the election. And I have every expectation that courts will treat these lawsuits and these claims the way that they deserve, which is to be rejected. But I think I wanted, if I could just borrow one additional point that you made, I think really to start the show, and that is that every election in American history is imperfect. How could it not be imperfect when I think, as Omar Sevier was mentioning, it's not as though we spend infinite money on our election system. Almost every election has somebody who was supposed to vote who didn't get to vote and somebody who was allowed to vote who wasn't. But as Danielle was saying, that's, a dozen people, 20 people, 15 people over there. And what happens in American elections, and this is maybe not a perfectly happy truth, is the margins of victory swallow these tiny incremental errors so that they don't impugn the integrity and accuracy of the election system overall. When you have an election like this election that's decided by a minimum, if you could literally pick which votes you wanted, requires 40-some thousand votes to change hands. And, of course, 5 million votes in the popular vote. I think that when you're talking about those kinds of margins, nothing that has been filed in any court, including the 83-page complaint in the Middle District of Pennsylvania, nothing comes close to showing widespread fraud or some kind of hoax or some kind of basis for discarding the otherwise legitimate results of the election. It is. It's just picking around the edges. And that's what made Karl Rove say, this is just not adding up to anything in the end. which makes, I think, wonder, what are we going through this process for? And I think those answers are dramatic politics, and at the cost of American democracy, at the cost of American confidence in elections, and at further divisiveness. And some set of people would ask, what else did you expect? I mean, this is the kind of behavior that has marked these last 4 years. And I think it is disappointing, but not altogether surprising to see it carrying on afterward.
Daniel, though, could we say that, I mean, if these cases do not hold up in court, the courts will rule, the results will stand, and we can go forward from there? Or do these allegations and these lawsuits sort of end up just making people feel like we cannot trust our election system or the results of our election system?
I don't think so, by and large. I think by and large, the American people know how to kind of see past the bluster. And that's why I say I think it's really encouraging, the polling numbers I saw, that while you can look at certain slices of the electorate, that Donald Trump has influenced overall. Americans understand that their democracy is as strong this year as it has been in the past, and in fact, at its strongest this year, because it survived a pandemic and with record turnout. That being said, I'm not sure it's the lawsuits or the specific allegations as much as the PR strategy that relies on them that is, you know, harmful to our democracy. And, you know, as Craig said, kind of is, you know, at the price of kind of faith in democracy for at least some sector of the American people. You know, the lawsuits are all for show. They will get thrown out. I'm relatively confident in that. And even if one or two kind of very small claims were to make their way through, they're not going to make any difference whatsoever. It's not even like he needs to win in one state. It would have to be, you know, multiple states. Professor Rick Hassan, who's an election law professor, wrote an article the other day saying he would need three Hail Marys. And another professor wrote back and said, actually, I think he would just have to have the refs agree to move the ball down the field without any play. I think that's right. So I don't think that the lawsuits are all that serious, but the PR campaign is, at least for, you know, this kind of part of our electorate that's being stoked. And I think that's really unfortunate. I think, you know, President-elect Joe Biden will have a lot of work to do to try to bring the country together, as he says is his goal.
Well, we're going to take another short break, get back to our conversation. We've got a lot of people that want to join us, a lot more to talk about. That's Danielle Lang, co-director of Voting Rights and Redistricting at the Campaign Legal Center. Also with us, Craig Green. He's a professor of law at Temple University. And you can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne talking with Craig Green and Danielle Lang about the fact that President Trump and the Republican leadership have yet to acknowledge the results of the presidential election, claiming widespread fraud without evidence. We're taking a critical look at some of these questionable allegations of illegal voting this election season. Let me read a couple of emails. One from Dick. He says, I think Trump's strategy is to stall the certification process with lawsuits until the state's deadline arrives. Then the Republican-controlled legislatures will get to decide the makeup of the Electoral College members. How can this be stopped? That's a big question. Craig, can I toss that to you? Do you have an answer to Dick?
Sure. So the state certification is November 23rd, and all the lawsuits, the big lawsuits, the big relief they're asking a judge to do is to stop the certification. If the Trump campaign wins one of those lawsuits, they'll stop the certification. But I think that's extremely unlikely. He's not going to win those lawsuits. And then the certification will go forward. And a really important point is it's not up to him whether the election goes forward, whether the Electoral College votes get counted. It's actually up to the Pennsylvania legislature and Pennsylvania law and the Electoral College system. So another thing that people talk about is, well, what about the General Assembly? Can they just ignore the election and pick their own favorite electors? And constitutionally, maybe so, maybe not, but that would be outrageous. And I think just this week, the Senate Majority Leader said, we're absolutely not going to do that. Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina encouraged them to do that. I think that's number one. I think it's not going to happen. And number two, if you imagine the General Assembly just ignoring all the votes cast, I think that would be a nuclear situation for Pennsylvania politics.
I mean, would that be unprecedented, Craig?
Oh, absolutely unprecedented. Yes. There have been a number of outrageous and sort of scandalous things that have happened in American electoral history. But never before has in this era where we have popular elections for electors for president, never has that happened. And I think there's no chance it'll happen in, for example, Pennsylvania or in Michigan. I mean, people cannot even say that out loud. People can fear it in their dark nights by the pillow, but they can't say it out loud. No Pennsylvania or state politician is going to say, we're just going to ignore the election. That would be outrageous. Beyond whatever we think 2020 outrageous is, that's like five levels beyond that outrageous.
Danielle, here's a question for you from Kathy. She says, how is it determined that provisional ballots are valid when a person has voted by mail, shows up at the polling place? Is there a list or a method for the polling staff to know that the person has voted by mail and disallow the person to vote in person? Can you answer that?
I can. So that's a great question, and that's exactly why we have provisional ballots. So yes, if a mail ballot has been sent out to a voter, so, you know, I ask for a mail ballot, it's sent to me. If I were to present myself in person at the polls, the person running the polls would be able to see that I have a mail ballot outstanding. And so what they would do is if I brought it in, I could spoil it right there and say, here's my ballot. I don't want to vote it. I want to vote it in person instead. And then I could be permitted. But if it's still outstanding and I don't bring it with me, then you would vote a provisional ballot. And then that way they can determine after they usually process provisional ballots after they process mail ballots. So that they can know, okay, did this person already vote by mail? And if at the end of that they didn't, then their provisional ballot will count. If, it, in fact, their mail ballot was received, then their provisional ballot won't count. So there's pretty good procedures in place to make sure that everybody gets to cast their ballot, but only gets to cast one ballot. And I would just add to Craig's response to your prior question, sure. That last time I checked, it was the pinned tweet for one of the Republican legislative leaders that they have no intention of undoing the will of Pennsylvania voters and sending their own electors. So I think we can all rest easy despite kind of attempts by Rudy Giuliani types to suggest otherwise.
Here's an email from Dan. He says, challenging the vote is the least reason for Trump's challenging the vote count. The next plausible reason is to keep up Republican enthusiasm to vote in the Georgia senatorial runoff elections. But the main reason is for fundraising. The raised funds will go to the Republican National Committee, retiring Trump's campaign debt, and for Trump's personal use as well as lawsuits. It's a big scam. And just picking up on that, Dana Milbank did a pretty interesting investigation into all these fundraising come-ons that have been coming from Donald Trump and members of the campaign. And it looks like if you want to help with the recount, that's like pennies out of the money that comes in either for Trump's leadership PAC or going to the RNC. And I wonder, Craig, if you want to just weigh in on that briefly.
I do. I think that the politics of the lawsuits, if that's what they are and that's what they look to be, I just think it's such an ugly turn in American politics. Hillary Clinton could have raised a lot of money challenging votes in different states. Jill Stein did that, but Hillary Clinton did not. And there has been Al Gore did not. Al Gore could have made a lot of hay for himself. He wouldn't have had to make documentary movies if he had gone ahead and fought the ballots in Florida and Bush v. Gore in the year 2000. And it's one of the better, brighter traditions of American politics that people eventually accept their losses. And they do so because implicitly they confirm the faith in the American electoral system. And so it's not that I can't imagine the money to be made and the profit to be gained and the politics to be played in these next weeks and months, but it's such a disappointment. And I think the American people have to think about whether they're able, some sector of them, to rise above it and to try to put this kind of nonsense in the past, or whether this is the new mode as usual where everybody can benefit from doing this kind of thing. I think that's what the future holds, is that kind of a really dramatic choice.
Daniel, I'm reluctant to quote an anonymous senior Republican official who talked to the Washington Post, but I'll do it anyway. And this is what they said. What is the downside for humoring him? This is talking to President Trump for this little bit of time. No one seriously thinks the results will change. He went golfing this weekend. It's not like he's plotting how to prevent Joe Biden from taking power on January 20th. He's tweeting about filing some lawsuits. Those lawsuits will fail. Then he'll tweet some more about how the election was stolen, and then he'll leave. True, not true. I mean, that raises just so many questions and issues and concerns, and is infuriating on so many levels. Go ahead.
I think that probably a lot of what is said in there is true, right? About him golfing and tweeting and how this is all going to end with Joe Biden becoming president on January 20th, as you know, our electoral process demands. But not understanding the harm of quote unquote humoring him is really quite despicable. To not understand the importance of our elected leaders respecting the electoral process and demonstrating faith in our electoral process is really quite ugly, and suggests that at the end of the day, folks are thinking more about kind of their own political will and kind of support from folks who support Donald Trump rather than any kind of more higher democratic ideals. And so the harms are quite obvious. The kind of principled reasons why Republican and Democratic officials have an obligation to accept the electoral results, regardless of whether or not there's one man on top who is not doing so, is obvious. Quite frankly, Lindsey Graham said the quiet part out loud the other day when he said basically when Republicans win, it's because they have the votes and because they have the support of voters, and when Republicans lose, it's because of fraud. And it doesn't work that way, right? And I think that Republican officials, elected officials, would be wise to actually think about whether or not they really want to undermine their own legitimacy by undermining the results of the election. As you said earlier, Republicans did quite well down ballot, are declaring victory all over the place, even though certification is not complete, which is entirely proper. They won those elections. But you can't have it both ways. The harms to our democratic society of having elected officials that don't understand the importance of affirming democracy are obvious.
You know, Greg, you mentioned Bush v. Gore, and of course that goes back 20 years to 2000. How different is that from what we're dealing? I mean, obviously we're talking about one state, and it was, 500 and some votes. So an extremely close election there. Are there lessons, or was that kind of a one-off?
I think it is very different. First, for the reasons you mentioned, one state, a few hundred votes. It was never more than that, much more than 1,000 votes. The people don't remember this, or people of a certain age do. They called Florida for Gore, then they called it for Bush, and then they stopped calling it altogether. And they had a mandatory recount, and then they had suits about the recount. But I think that stuff is all super different. And the other thing that's super different is when Al Gore, I mean, if anybody hasn't watched it, if you watch Al Gore's concession speech, it's the best speech he ever gave in his career, as far as I'm concerned. And it really spoke to some of these values that Danielle was referencing. And to the point of what is Donald Trump going to do, I have to say that if anybody has enough money to lose betting what Donald Trump's going to do, I think that's great. But I think the main thing that I would want to say to reaffirm some of these themes that we're talking about is it's not up to him. It's not up to him. And that's sometimes people are frustrated by having states as such important figures in American presidential elections. But I'll tell you what, on this day, states are really important actors in presidential elections, and the integrity of Pennsylvania's system, the integrity of Georgia's system, Arizona's system. These are the types of institutional structures that I think are going to carry American democracy forward, if it can be carried forward, so that we don't have to count on. Maybe Donald Trump will give some great Al Gore concession speech, but I'll tell you what, my breath is not that long. I can't hold it.
Well, if the numbers hold and Joe Biden is elected president of the United States, Danielle, but Trump never concedes, does not go to the inauguration, and won't leave the White House. These are all the scenarios that have been spun out there. Does that in any way delegitimize Joe Biden's win?
No, it's just a disgrace, right? And, you know, of course, there will be some of his supporters that he will bring along with him. But it doesn't do anything to delegitimize our election process. It just is a disgrace and an embarrassment, I think. President-elect Biden had it right when he was asked about this, and he said it was an embarrassment and that it wouldn't speak well to his legacy. Ultimately, he'll be seen as a sore loser. He will... It is, you know, as Craig said, it's not up to him, never has been up to him. We have a democratic system. It's been nice that we've had elected leaders thus far, that even when politics is at its most crass and its most divisive and its most politicized, that at the end of the day, we let the American people speak and we accept it. Unfortunately, we have many democratic norms that this president hasn't been willing to accept, and this may just be one more. But luckily, our Constitution and our electoral system doesn't depend on the niceties of norms when it comes to the transition of power.
Here's a comment from Rose Craig. Why not make the penalties for voter fraud, which I don't believe happens much, so punitive that no one would consider doing it? Would that help put this issue to rest? Just picking up, there is very little actual voter fraud, but nonetheless, are there penalties? Is there a way to put this allegation of voter fraud to rest?
There are penalties, and every once in a blue moon, people are prosecuted and convicted. And so I think that's all very serious. And I think you heard from Omar Sevier that there are a lot of bureaucratic processes, sort of criminal prosecution, where people are rooted out and investigated and tried. But the problem is, and I think this is what Daniel was alluding to, and everybody knows it, the problem is that there are sectors of American society who don't believe things that are true. And that's a problem, whatever you think the truth is, sort of science or institutional frameworks or whatever else. And I think that the power of that total disbelief is really the problem as much as anything. There is not, and it deserves repeating, there is not any suggestion of widespread voter fraud in this election, in prior elections, in any election. Voter fraud doesn't pay, for want of a better term. And in margins of 40, 50,000 votes, you have to construct wild conspiracy theories of hoaxes and foreign ballots, like any sort of, it just becomes, you know, not just a matter of individual malfeasance or like bad actors, but it gets so out of hand. And I think you have both things happening right now in terms of the rumor mill. People have some idea that voter fraud has something to do with what the fight's about. It does not. And people have some idea that maybe there's some sort of shadowy hoax that isn't covered by the live stream. And it's also, it's very difficult to credit. And there will be, as Danielle was saying, there will be judges and there will be actors who will vindicate and validate President Biden's victory. And there will be people who just don't believe that. And that's a really hard struggle for America going forward, is what to do in a situation where the truth seems in some significant way up for grabs. And I think all we can keep doing is sort of keep trying to tell the truth and try to direct people to reliable sources and this kind of stuff, and have conversations, I think, quite frankly, like this radio show, where people have an effort to try to get past the noise and past the thunder and past the fog and think about the realities of American democracy. And I think the hopes and aspirations that many of us are trying to carry forward in 2020.
Do you share that, Danielle? We've got about a minute before we have to shut this whole thing down.
Absolutely. I share all of that. You know, what I think is important for American people to hear is not kind of, we can say there's no voter fraud and things like that. What's most important is for Americans to hear about the process, why it works, why they should have faith in it. You know, over 140 Americans' votes have been tabulated and carefully
140 million.
Reviewed.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to focus on, is kind of congratulating Americans and saying that anything that is throwing this election into doubt is throwing their vote and their voice into doubt. And we should not stand for it as a people.
Well, we're going to leave it there. My thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Danielle Lang is co-director of voting rights and redistricting at the Campaign Legal Center. Thanks, Danielle, for joining us on Radio Times today.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Craig Green joining us as he does a couple times a year, professor of law at Temple University. Craig, nice to have you back with us on the show as well.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out about the program, more about the program. You can always tune into the rebroadcast of Radio Times, and that's weeknights at 11 o'clock. And then you can always download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.